looked disconcertingly similar to one of the Thorn Guard hand signs, but different enough that Jonan knew it was just a sign that she had a headache.
As much as it pains me to admit that Jonan has a point, I'm afraid that in this case he does.
Jonan frowned in bemusement. Why would that be painful? Talion smirked. Have you ever tried listening to yourself? Landon shook his head. As amusing as this all is, I'd like to point out that our last encounter with Sterling was completely one-sided. I don't think we put a scratch on him. Talion folded his arms. Well, sure, but I wasn't there.
Silk shot him a fiery glare. And you're lucky for that, Sal. Your arrogance is usually cute, but not right now. Garrick Torrent died fighting Sterling. If you were there, maybe you would have saved him. Maybe you would have died too. In either case, this is not something you should be posturing about.
The swordsman lowered his eyes, turning his head away. You're right, of course. I'm sorry. I miss Garrick too. I need to do something. Every day we wait, the chances of catching Sterling diminish. Nakane refilled her glass of wine, passing the bottle back to Landon.
I agree with the shockingly overconfident swordsman. Steps should be taken to apprehend this Sterling.
She turned her head to Lydia.
Major Hastings, would you be willing to put together a force to find the Vacas?
Lydia nodded.
I will speak to my superiors about it. It's more likely now that he's killed one of our own, but I can't promise an army. This will most likely have to be a discreet affair. One does not hunt the child of a god without significant political dangers.
Nakane sipped at her drink and set it back down.
Is there any precedent for this sort of affair?
Not that I know of.
Lydia adjusted her glasses, a thoughtful expression on her face.
The Vacas are typically left to their own devices, as much as we might dislike them. I'm not aware of one of them ever killing a paladin before, however.
Jonan looked to Nakane, then to Lydia.
I need to advise you against this. The Vacas are used to acting with impunity for a reason. They are nigh unstoppable, and that's not even taking the possibility of war into consideration.
Nakane turned toward Jonan, liquid swishing in her half-full glass.
And what would you suggest, Master Kestrian? Shall we allow one of my brother's killers to go free, fearing the consequences of pursuing him?
Jonan winced.
Give me some time to consider the matter. Perhaps I could speak to one of the other Vacas and find some leverage.
We do not have the luxury of delaying much longer. Without evidence, Tyrion will go free. I will not allow that.
Nakane set her glass down, standing and turning to Lydia.
Major Hastings, I will look forward to hearing the results of your inquiry with your superiors.
The last child of House Theus turned back toward Jonan.
Speak to your other Vacas if you must. But I would be more interested in seeing results with Tyrion. If his daughter can be swayed to speak against him, perhaps there is hope for resolving that matter before we find the Vacas.
She lifted a hand and left it hovering in the air near Landon.
Come, cousin. Escort me home.
Landon rolled his eyes, setting down his glass.
Right, Nakane.
He stood, taking her hand, and began to walk her out of the room. He glanced back toward the blonde woman on the way out.
Don't do anything stupid without me.
Silk smiled.
I wouldn't dream of it.
Jonan found Rialla at Southway Manor, just as he had expected. He had not expected to find her with company. Liara Dianas sat across from her sister at a small table, sipping a cup of tea. A hint of sadness pulled at the corners of her eyes. Rialla had a book open in front of her, but she turned and stood as Jonan approached.
I wasn't expecting to see you here for a while.
Nakane should be relatively safe with her cousin for the time being. I need to speak to you about the trial. Can we talk privately?
Rialla glanced at Liara, who remained seated.
Anything you want to say to me, you can say around my sister.
I'm not sure that's such a good idea.
Liara set her cup of tea down, waving a hand.
It's all right. I won't be offended if you need some privacy.
No, I think you should hear this.
Rialla folded her arms.
It's all right. I've told her everything.
Everything?
He felt a momentary surge of panic.
What does everything entail?
Jonan took a deep breath, unconsciously lifting two fingers to his forehead.
Right, right.
I'll be succinct, then. Your father was, at a minimum, most likely involved in coercing Nadelia Theus into suicide. Given that he also manipulated the poison in my arm before Liara treated it, and thank you very much for that, by the way, I feel it's safe to say he was also attempting to conceal evidence of a connection with Calciris's murder.
You're welcome.
Liara turned her head away meekly. Riala nodded.
Yes, you're probably right. And I suppose you'd also want to mention that Liara and I are both going to be suspects if Father goes free.
Precisely. You had a chance to interrogate one of the people attacking the compound. You have evidence none of the rest of us do. Moreover, if you choose to speak about your brother...
No, I will not bring Elias into this, and I do not believe I will be addressing the court at all.
Riala looked at her sister.
I have only just regained some semblance of my family. I won't risk it again so soon.
Inaction itself is a risk. What precisely do you expect to happen if Turian is set free? Liara turned to look at Jonan directly, her voice faint.
We will leave.
Jonan tensed his jaw in frustration.
That will make you look like criminals. It doesn't matter. I have places I can go, as I am sure you're aware.
Riala shook her head. Would you allow your father to walk free, even knowing what he has done? Liara stood, moving to Riala's side.
He is right, sister. If we do nothing, we will bear the guilt for the remainder of our lives.
She turned her gaze to Jonan.
I will speak to the court.
Riala shook her head fervently, taking her sister's hands.
No. No! You would make yourself a target. You must not do this.
She turned her gaze toward Jonan.
Give us time to think on this. I will not leave the city without informing you first. I swear to that.
Jonan nodded, his expression grim.
Very well.
I will leave you to consider it. The scribe's arm throbbed with inner pain as he marched out of the manor into the chilling air outside.
Chapter 25 Talion 6 The Edges of Friendship. Talion knelt upon a stone floor, the Sekes sheathed at his side, encircled by a ring of an unfamiliar black powder. Around the circle were three figures, each holding a lit torch and wearing the robes of the priesthood of Xeracillus. This particular inquest was being held in an amphitheater beneath the open sky. Among the two rows of seats were a dozen paladins from varying branches of the order, each in full uniform. Lydia was not among them. Her injuries prohibited her presence. Behind the two rows of seats stood three familiar figures: Colonel Windham, Lieutenant Morris, and Second Lieutenant Banks. He had pictured a gathering of this kind many times, envisioning it as his initiation into the Paladins of Taos. But this was not an initiation. This was just his own part in the trial for the murder of a fallen friend. One of the three priests stepped away from the circle, raising the torch with both hands.
Applicant Solaris, you have been called to speak in the service of the laws of gods and men. Bound in the flames of purity, you must speak the truth lest they consume you.
Talion knew the words to speak for this particular ritual.
Bound in the flames of purity, I will speak only the truth. Let Xeracillus render his judgment upon me.
Then by the flames be judged.
Talion took a deep breath as the speaker stepped forward, lowering his ring to the powder. There was a flash of yellow-blue light as the powder sparked to life, spreading quickly into a conflagration that enveloped the air around him. The flames were only a few feet high, but in his kneeling state they came to the level of his neck. The ring of fire glowed blue, bathing him in warmth, but the flames did not burn his skin.
I don't sense them as flames, he realized as the fire licked close to his skin. They're not ordinary fire, not even ordinary sorceress fire. They feel more similar to what Adon used, but still different somehow.
He reached out instinctively with his mind, but the flames remained foreign, distant, and beyond his immediate control. If the blaze turned inward, he knew he would have no defense. Colonel Windham stepped down from her position near the top of the amphitheater, approaching the ring.
Applicant Solaris,
Please describe in your own words the events leading to the deaths of Applicant Laurent, Applicant Merrick, and Lieutenant Torrent.
Talion raised his head to look directly at the Colonel, not out of arrogance, but out of respect.
Colonel, I can only give honest testimony to what I directly witnessed, and I did not directly witness any of their deaths. My group arrived at the Shrine of Lissari to find Applicants Laurent and Merrick already deceased. Applicant Sterling appeared to be wounded but alive. Applicant Eridus also appeared deceased.
How did you determine that Applicant Eridus was deceased?
Talion grunted.
He was lying in a prone position like the other deceased applicants.
Applicant Sterling told us a story of how Eridus had died, and we took him at his word.
Continue.
Applicant Sterling convinced us that he had been attacked only minutes before. We believed this story, and wishing to apprehend the people who had murdered the other applicants, we split our group.
Under what authority did you break from your training procedures to split your group and attempt to apprehend these supposed murderers?
Well, Velis, technically, but...
Our group acted on our own authority.
The flames seemed to burn somewhat warmer around him, but did not yet singe his flesh. He felt a bead of sweat drip down his forehead.
Proceed to explain the events following that.
Velis and Landon chose to stay behind to assist Applicant Sterling. Applicant Velis had the best medical skills, and thus the best chance of saving Sterling's life. Applicant Landon has superior archery skills, and thus had the best chance of providing Velis with cover fire if the assailants returned. Asphodel and I went to follow the presumed trails of our enemies.
At which point, you split again, correct?
Talion nodded.
Yes.
Applicant Asphodel's divination abilities indicated to her that the enemy path diverged. She intended to catch Applicant Crimson, while I went to capture the Wandering War.
You state that your goal was to capture. Your intent was to arrest these enemies, then, and not take revenge for your fallen enemies?
Talion nodded. Yes, although I was prepared to use lethal force in my own defense if necessary.
Very well. Continue.
The flames seemed to sink somewhat, and he felt his words coming easier. I confronted the Wandering War. I was outmatched at first. He demonstrated the ability to copy other forms of sorcery he had witnessed, including a version of Keldin's blade calling, at which point I discerned that he was most likely a harvester of war. A murmur went through the crowd. Colonel Windham raised a fist, bringing silence to the paladins behind her.
A harvester of war? I will be interested in hearing more on this subject at a later time, but for the moment, explain how you survived this encounter.
I severed the bond between master and servant.
The colonel folded her arms, quirking an eyebrow.
You severed a metaphorical bond with a physical attack?
During our battle, I began to sense a connection between the Wandering War. When he removed his cowl, I noted a dominion mark on his forehead. I was able to use the Sekes to destroy that mark. The effect on him was immediate. He ceased fighting, screamed, and fell to the ground. After a few tense moments, he righted himself, laughing, and thanked me for his freedom.
The colonel took a breath, turning to look at the other officers. Lieutenant Banks made a few quick hand signs that Talion didn't recognize, and then nodded her head. The colonel turned back to Talion.
And what followed that event?
While I was tending my own injuries, Lieutenant Torrent teleported nearby. He looked surprised to see the Wandering War helping me, and informed us that Velis and Landon were under attack. Warren and I quickly readied ourselves, and Torrent teleported us to concealed positions near the battle. Warren and I moved to engage from flanking positions, while Torrent teleported directly back into the fray. I moved slowly due to my leg injury. By the time I reached the battlefield, Torrent had been slain.
By Jonathan Sterling?
Talion nodded.
I did not see it happen directly, but I arrived quickly thereafter, and I trust the words of the survivors.
Would it not have been possible that the Wandering War could have slain Lieutenant Torrent?
Talion frowned.
I would find that highly unlikely. Landon and Velis saw...
Please only take your own perspective into account.
The swordsman took another breath.
It would have been possible for the Wandering War to attack Torrent from behind and harm him, but I find it unlikely, given how quickly I arrived at the scene thereafter and how Sterling reacted to the Wandering War's presence. Moreover, the Wandering War's behavioral changes after I freed him indicated,
by your own admission, you freed an entity connected to the Dominion of War from external control.
Do you believe you have a sufficient understanding of such entities to judge their motives in the midst of an ongoing battle?
No. Not specifically, no, Colonel. The Colonel turned and began to pace around the circle of flames.
You stated that applicants Laurent and Merrick were deceased prior to your arrival at the shrine. Did you personally validate this?
He turned to follow the Colonel as best he could without standing.
No, Colonel. I only saw them on the floor of the cave from a distance.
I believe that concludes this line of questioning. She turned to the other officers.
Lieutenants, do you have any other questions for the applicant?
No, ma'am, they replied in unison.
Very well. The Colonel turned to the priests.
Judges, this candidate has concluded his testimony. How does Xeracillus render his judgment upon him?
One of the other priests spoke from behind Talion.
The darkness of concealment was upon one of his answers. However, Xeracillus judged his words to be in defense of another. He did not breach the oaths of the faith, though he should spend some time in contemplation of this hint of shadow.
The Colonel gave the priest a curt nod.
That is sufficient. You may release him from the flames of judgment.
The priests lowered their torches to the flame, and the fire escaped the circle, traveling to relight the three torches. The first of the priests spoke again.
In the name of Xeracillus, I declare you purified, and your words to be truly spoken. You may rise, applicant Talion, and return to your fellows.
Talion rose on wobbling feet, turning to salute the colonel. Colonel Wyndham returned his salute.
Applicant Talion, you are dismissed.
She turned toward the lieutenants.
Bring me the next one.
The Wandering War's cell was not what Talion had envisioned. Gray stone walls surrounded the chamber on all sides. There were no doors, no windows, and no other forms of physical entry or exit. The air inside smelled fresh, indicating the paladins had a sorcerous method of circulating the habitat's air supply. The chamber was the size of a large bedroom, though there was no bed within, merely a single prisoner at the center, and a pile of books adjacent to a plate of uneaten food and a jug of liquid. Lieutenant Holder, a young paladin of Cytira with prematurely graying hair, released his grip on Talion's wrist as the disorientation from their teleportation faded. Lydia was at his opposite side, leaning heavily on a wooden staff. Her injured leg was still splinted and wrapped in bandages, but she had recovered enough to leave her bed in the 3 days since Talion had played his part in the trial. The copper-skinned warrior sat cross-legged with a book in his lap, surrounded on all sides by layers of wards etched into the floor and ceilings. The walls of the rooms were similarly warded, although with different symbols. Talion recognized some from a variety of different languages, including his native Saeli. The Wandering War was dressed in simple country clothes, a gray shirt and pants, with no shroud to cover the scar that ran across his forehead. War set the book aside, looking up and turning his gaze directly toward Talion.
Ah, I have been requesting your presence for days now. Have you recovered?
Talion considered the question, folding his arms. For the most part. The Wandering War stood.
Excellent. Shall we begin immediately?
Lydia gave Talion a glance that spoke of clear disapproval. Lieutenant Holder was already reaching for his sword.
That isn't why I'm here today. He folded his hands in front of him. I was hoping you would be willing to answer some questions for my friends and me.
The copper-skinned man tilted his head to the side and then stepped closer to Lieutenant Holder. When War impacted an invisible barrier, he paused, sniffing at the air.
This one wishes violence toward me. Permit it, and I will answer your questions.
Lydia took a step forward, motioning for Holder to move back. He quickly acquiesced, putting his back to the wall of the room.
Is this safe?
The sorceress calmly put a hand against the barrier.
Dominion of Protection, reinforce this barrier.
A flash of light illuminated a cube-shaped barrier that enveloped the inner portion of the room. The Wandering War smiled.
An excellent preparation, given my tone. Good.
Lydia frowned, her eyes fluttering as she stepped backward. Talion stepped close, taking her arm to steady her.
You all right? I am fine, That spell took more out of me than it should have.
War tapped a finger against the newly reinforced barrier.
Ah, still suffering from the touch of the Vakas, lacking in the strength to fight as you once did. I could be persuaded to help you with that problem.
Lydia narrowed her eyes, pulling her arm away from Talion and nodding to him, then looking back to War.
I am not interested, but thank you for your concern. I will recover on my own, given time.
In part, at least. I could make you better than before. But that is not why you are here, at least for now. If you will not trade blows with me, a trade of questions, then.
Holder took a breath, stepping away from the wall.
We do not negotiate with prisoners, and certainly not murderers.
The Wandering War stepped back, leaning back against the barrier on the opposite side of his cell.
Murder is such a peculiar term. Humans use it to ascribe immorality to any form of killing they find personally inconvenient. I don't make the distinction that you do, but nevertheless, I think it's fair to say I haven't murdered anyone.
Lydia straightened her back, taking a breath.
That ties into my first question. What was your role in the deaths of applicants Merrick and Laurent?
War shook his head, closing his scarlet eyes.
You must offer me something. I'm starving, and this,
he gestured to the food,
will not sate my appetite.
Talion tapped a fist against the invisible wall. If you're released, I'll train with you. The copper-skinned man turned his gaze toward the ground.
I would prefer something now, but I suppose the promise of bloodshed will have to suffice.
He turned his head toward Lydia.
I saw them killed. It was quick, as betrayals often are. Eredus created a poisonous vapor which they breathed. When they reported their sickness, Eredus played at healing Laurent while he shaped her blood into water. While Merrick watched the healing, Sterling stabbed him in the back of the neck.
Gods, turning someone's blood into water.
Talion tightened his jaw. The Wandering War spared him a glance.
Ah, good. That angers you, as well it should. There was no glory in it, no battle to be won. I would call their deaths worthless, but they did bring me to battle.
And to freedom from compulsion, Talion steepled his fingers together.
Trading one set of chains for another is no great joy. And while this cell,
the copper-skinned man stretched,
is roomier than the last, it has provided fewer opportunities for entertainment, at least until now.
Lydia reached up with her free hand to adjust her glasses.
Another question. What do you know about the death of Calceris Theus?
The Wandering War put his left thumb to his chin, closing his eyes for a moment.
Ah, that was the one I was summoned to obfuscate. It was more tactically done than Sterling's more recent gambit.
The copper-skinned man pushed himself away from the invisible wall, coming forward again.
Sterling brought me to this plane, bound me, and shrouded me in a cloak of sight sorcery. I was forced to walk a shallow path while Eredus followed, an assassin's blade in hand. The building was impressively protected against bombardment and teleportation, but not against mere stealth. We followed a patrolling guard into the building and quickly found our target.
Lydia's eyes narrowed.
Continue?
It was quite simple after that. Sterling had shown me the plans to the building. I went to the correct room. Eredus followed. I noted to Eredus that the boy was shielded, and thus he chose to poison the drink on the nearby table rather than test the knife. We did not wish to risk allowing the child to raise an alarm, and the liquid would bypass the ring's protections. We waited for the child to wake and drink, thus ensuring the kill before leaving the room.
How did Eredus poison the drink?
Lydia put both hands on her staff, leaning heavily against it.
Core sorcery. It's a simple thing to turn water into poison for one skilled in that art.
The sorceress nodded. And the Dominion essence of poison we found at the ritual area?
Ah, you found that, did you? Just another deflection. Sterling placed it to divert any investigations toward poison sorcerers.
And you had no direct part in the poisoning, or in killing any of our paladin applicants or members?
The Wandering War shrugged at that.
Nothing as direct as cutting someone apart, no. Although I certainly did try with this one.
He indicated Talion with a gesture. Talion grimaced.
You're not really helping the case for your freedom.
Is that what this is about?
The Wandering War laughed.
Oh, I suppose I should be playing at placation then, but I don't want to.
Talion glanced at Lydia.
I think you can see that he was just being coerced into helping Sterling.
Well, not precisely, War mentioned. I mean, yes, he bound me with sorcery and I didn't have a choice, but he was having me do things that served my dominion. Redirecting blame to cause conflict isn't my personal specialty, but it is one way to make war.
Lydia glanced back at Talion. And as you said, he's really not helping his own case for freedom. He's a being connected to war. He's dangerous.
Extremely dangerous,
the Wandering War added cheerfully.
Terribly dangerous, catastrophically, perhaps.
Lydia shook her head, cracking a smile.
I'll take your word on that. Another question. Were you in any way involved in a second assault on House Theus?
War made a scoffing noise.
What we did could hardly be called an assault, but to answer your question, no. I visited there only once.
Were you aware of any plans for a second attack?
War shook his head.
No. A shame. Infiltration is not to my tastes, but a direct attack on that compound.
He turned his head upward, inhaling a deep breath.
That would have been delightful.
Have you ever heard of someone called the Shrouded One?
War shrugged.
Can't say I have. Sounds like a name made for a calculated effect of mystery.
That's rather ironic coming from him.
Lydia turned away from War, looking to Talion and Holder.
I believe we're done here.
Talion nodded to Lydia and looked toward Holder.
I'd like you to give the two of us some time to talk privately.
The lieutenant looked to Lydia and then back to Talion.
You want me to leave the two of you in here with him, with no way out?
Talion shook his head.
No, I meant just myself and War. You'd be taking Lydia with you.
The sorceress stepped away from the barrier and gave Talion a disapproving look.
Absolutely not.
Holder breathed a sigh of relief.
Yes, ma'am.
5 minutes, that's all.
I have personal questions. Talion folded his arms.
I've earned that much at least. It's not a question of earning anything. This entity is, by his own admission, terribly dangerous. I will consider allowing you to speak to him privately after I've had time to set up a way to view the cell remotely.
Talion sighed in resignation.
Yes, ma'am.
Good.
Lydia turned toward the Wandering War.
One last thing, War.
He raised an eyebrow at her quizzically.
Ask. I'm curious. But I do expect repayment for these boons I have granted you.
Would you like to fight a Vakes?
A knife of a smile slid slowly across the copper-skinned man's face.
I would like that very much.
Chapter 26 Lydia 7 Allies
Lydia forced her eyes shut as the next teleportation spell returned her to her chambers. Lieutenant Holder and Talion stood beside her as she steadied herself with her walking staff. Taking a breath, she turned to Lieutenant Holder first.
Thank you, Lieutenant. Please inform the Colonel that we will proceed with the meeting with the next prisoner, and then return here.
The gray-haired lieutenant saluted smartly.
Yes, ma'am.
He had an expression of relief as he departed her office. Talion leaned up against a nearby wall. She shook her head at him.
Applicant Talion, your behavior in the interrogation was inappropriate.
The swordsman blinked, pushing off from the wall and straightening his stance.
Apologies, ma'am.
What do you mean?
That was neither an appropriate place nor the appropriate time to ask for permission to speak to the prisoner without supervision. You do realize that we're in the middle of a murder investigation?
He remained at attention.
Yes, ma'am.
She waved her free hand dismissively.
You can put your arm down. At ease.
He relaxed his shoulders and shifted to a more casual stance.
I'm sorry if I made you look bad.
It's not about that. Your lack of professionalism is a part of the problem, but I'm more concerned about your lack of focus. What did you want to ask him about?
Talion scratched the back of his head. During our fight, I was able to sense some of the dominions he was using, and in one case actually manipulated. He called me cousin. I think he knows something about who or what I actually am.
Lydia adjusted her glasses.
That is interesting, but as I said, it was not an appropriate time.
Talion sighed.
I understand. I just wasn't sure if I'd get another opportunity. I thought you of all people would understand.
I do understand. After you told me you had met Eric Taran, I wanted nothing more than to figure out exactly where he had gone and ask him about my father. And I do thank you for mentioning me to him, but his reaction, if you read it right, just leaves me with more questions.
But do you see me throwing my resources at finding him right now?
No, of course not, because I'm in the middle of a murder investigation, Talion, and so are you.
He looked away. Consider me thoroughly chastised. Now come over here.
He turned back toward her slowly, his expression dubious, and then stepped closer. She reached out and put a hand on his arm.
Dominion of Knowledge, should you really be doing that? You just nearly fainted from your last spell.
She ignored him.
I invoke you. Dominion of Metal, Dominion of Flame, Dominion of Stone, Unidentified Dominion.
A wave of pain surged through Lydia's mind as she reeled backward, only to be once again steadied by Talion's hand. She shut her eyes for several seconds, breathing heavily.
Are you all right?
She nodded silently, her mind still pounding.
Give me a moment.
He maneuvered her to a chair where she sat, keeping her eyes closed for a few minutes until the pain subsided to a tolerable level.
I'm not detecting any new dominions. Interesting. That implies that I must have been sensing what war was doing through one of the dominions I already have access to.
She nodded, keeping her eyes shut.
I can take a more detailed...
Not right now, Lydia. I'm interested, but you're clearly not in the state to be...
I won't let this beat me.
She tightened her hands into fists.
I won't let that Vakes take everything I've worked so hard to build.
She brought in a sharp breath.
Talion set his hand on her forehead. You don't have to push yourself so hard, Lydia. You'll work your way back to your full strength, but you need to do it gradually, or you'll just make things worse.
She lowered her head.
I know that. I just can't stop thinking about... I can't stop picturing what it felt like. I thought I was going to die, Talion, and I couldn't do anything. He killed Garrick, right in front of me, and I was helpless. I don't want to be helpless.
Talion stepped away from her for a moment. She turned to see him pushing the bar on her door into the locked position, and he knelt down behind where she was seated, putting his hands on her back and softly rubbing her shoulders. She closed her eyes and, for a few moments, allowed herself to cry. Lydia dismissed Talion several minutes later, wiping away her tears. She was sitting behind her desk. Some measure of her composure returned when a knock sounded on her door.
Come in.
She had not expected to see Colonel Wyndham on the other side, but nevertheless, she instinctively rose and saluted her superior officer immediately. The colonel returned her salute.
At ease, officer. Are you prepared to visit our next prisoner?
She nodded hastily.
Anything to get my mind back into focus?
Yes, ma'am.
Good. I will be accompanying you.
The colonel stepped into the room, revealing that Lieutenant Holder was standing behind her. Lydia reached for her walking staff, grabbing it and using it to push herself back into a standing position. She limped to meet the others, reaching out with a hand to Lieutenant Holder. He took her hand with his right, and Colonel Wyndham's hand with his left.
Eritar, may your winds guide us safely on our journey. Dominion of Travel, carry us to the cell of applicant Eridus.
Lydia shut her eyes to avoid a fraction of the disorientation that accompanied the teleportation spell, opening them several moments later. Eridus's cell was nearly identical to the one in which the Wandering War had been held. It was a standard preparation for prisoners that were known to have sorceress abilities. The wards on the walls would disallow teleportation spells that were not cast with a specific key, a key that only specific paladin officers were aware of, and numerous other protections reinforced the stone and air against sorceress manipulation. In addition to those protections, Lydia noted two stone statues standing in the back corners of the room, constructs that could be controlled remotely by one of their sorcerers, similar to the ones that were used in the paladin tests. Since Eridus was a water sorcerer, stone defenders would be resilient against his sorcery, whereas any ordinary soldier was at risk of having their blood transmuted. The Rethri in question was lying down, facing the ceiling. Unlike the Wandering War, he had eaten the food he had been given, but had no books to keep him entertained. "Applicant Eridus," the colonel spoke almost immediately, folding her arms. "You are aware of the accusations against you?" He didn't move from his reclined position, not even his eyes shifted.
"Sure."
"Excellent. That will expedite this process. Do you have anything to say in your defense?" It wasn't quite the process that Lydia would have gone through, but she waited patiently, preparing her own questions with what little concentration she could muster. He tilted his head toward the group just slightly.
"Nope."
"You understand that if you are found guilty of killing two other paladin applicants, you will be executed?" The Rethri gave her a half-smile.
"I doubt that."
Colonel Wyndham narrowed her eyes.
"And why is that?" "I won't be here for very much longer."
"He still thinks he can escape?"
Colonel Wyndham laughed sharply, drawing confused looks from both Lydia and Lieutenant Holder.
"Oh, no, no. You're not going to be getting out of here. Not intact, at least. Those applicants may not be full paladins yet, but they were my responsibility. My people. I do not allow someone to murder my people and walk free." "I'm sure you'll find some way to live with your disappointment."
Eridus sat up.
"Is that all you're here for? Empty threats? I was hoping for something with a little more substance to break the tedium."
The colonel turned to Lydia.
"Major Hastings, I believe you had questions pertaining to your own investigation. Ask them while I check the integrity of the wards."
Lydia nodded, turning to Eridus while the colonel moved to put a hand on the wall. The Rethri clasped his hands in his lap, his expression neutral.
"Did you kill Calcirus Theus?"
The Rethri raised both eyebrows.
"Awfully direct. I like that."
"Yes."
"Yes?"
"Yes, I killed him. Poisoned his drink, went out the window, and went on my merry way. Next question."
"Were you involved in a second attack on the Theus Manor?"
He cracked his knuckles.
"Not directly, but I provided them with a variety of poisons."
"Define them."
"Oh, is that what this is about? You still haven't put together a case against anyone for the second attack? That's adorable. What are you going to offer me in exchange for that information?"
Lydia folded her arms.
"Well, we could let you die by the sword rather than being drawn and quartered."
Eridus tightened his lips for a moment and then flashed a grin.
"No. Don't think so. You're not going to kill me. Not as long as you know that I know information you need. And I'll be out of here long before you can force that information out of me."
Lydia glanced at the colonel, but she still appeared to be distracted, whispering into the walls. Turning her head back to Eridus, Lydia flexed her left hand in the air.
"I can make your cell more comfortable."
He nodded slowly.
"That might get you a few words." "What are you offering?"
"A bed? Pillows?"
"More."
"Maybe some entertainment, if you provide us with sufficient information."
"What kind of entertainment? Men? Women?"
"Books."
He shrugged.
"Boring. But better than staring at the walls, I suppose." "Fine, I'll give you a bit."
Lydia tensed her jaw.
"This is too easy. He's toying with us. He's just going to tell us what would be convenient for him. In spite of the stories, though, knowledge sorcery can't read minds. I need a memory sorcerer to do that, and we don't have any in the city. But we do have Riala Dianis. I can make this work."
"Good," she turned to Colonel Wyndham. "I need to retrieve someone to assist in this investigation. Shall we return here a bit later?" Eridus stood up.
"Really? That's it? You're leaving now without asking anything?"
Lydia turned and smiled at him.
"Oh, you'll get your questions. Don't worry. You'll get them soon."
It took several hours for Lydia to get a message to Jonan, who managed to retrieve Riala for her and then coordinate with Colonel Wyndham and Lieutenant Holder for another trip to their prisoner's cell. Colonel Wyndham expressed her reservations as they approached the cell.
I'm not certain this is wise, Major. Miss Dianis is a possible suspect herself. I was standing in defense of the household when it was attacked, Colonel.
Riella had a bemused expression and bags around her eyes, implying a lack of sleep.
Nevertheless, your presence here could be construed as a conflict of interest, especially given that your father is still on trial.
Lydia turned her head to the Colonel.
She hasn't been charged with anything, and she's already involved in the investigation as a consultant through the Thorngard. Given that, this is just an extension of her existing responsibilities. The court may raise concerns if they are presented with information we gain through this, but they will be forced to accept that the evidence exists at all. There's nothing illegal about using the accused's relatives in a case.
It just feels unseemly. Colonel Wyndham shook her head.
But given the gravity of the investigation, I suppose you are right. I will permit this inquiry, though I intend to end it early if I see anything untoward.
Riella nodded curtly.
Thank you for the opportunity to assist in the investigation.
Her tone sounded sincere.
She probably regrets that she still has not spoken directly to the court. Perhaps this will ease her conscience somewhat.
Eridus wore an expression of frustration when they arrived. He was sitting this time, his cell largely the same as before.
I was promised amenities, but... Ooh, hello there. Who's this beautiful creature? I thought I was only getting books. This is much better.
Riella fluttered her eyes, kneeling down by the runes that marked the edge of the invisible barrier.
I'm Riella. I hope you won't mind if I get a little close.
Using her real name? I was expecting a bit more subtlety, but I suppose it doesn't matter now. Lydia took the moment to inspect the wards herself, but found no irregularities. Nearby, Lieutenant Holder looked extraordinarily uncomfortable, while Colonel Wyndham was taciturn. Eridus crawled closer to Riella, leaning on his elbows and looking at her.
I don't mind at all, sweetheart. What brings you to a place like this? You going to entertain me?
Riella smiled.
No, darling. You're going to answer some questions for me.
Eridus made a pouty expression.
That's not what I was hoping for, but I suppose I don't mind a little bit of mixing business with pleasure.
Good, good. Now to start with, what's your real name?
Lyris Luria.
What the fuck? How'd you...
Shh! This'll go easier if you don't struggle. Luria? That's one of the great houses in the Forest of Blades, isn't it? That explains his confidence. Executing him might have harsh political ramifications.
Lydia glanced at the Colonel and saw a dour expression similar to Lydia's own. Eridus was visibly shaking when Lydia turned her gaze back toward him, but his gaze remained focused on Riella.
That's really disconcerting. I'm glad she's on our side, or at least something peripheral to our side. Now, tell me about who ordered the second attack on House Theus.
Sterling and I provided resources and intelligence to a...
Fucking Mrs... He shook violently, continuing.
There's a group that thinks their leader can see the future.
The Disciples of the First?
That's them.
Riella paused a moment, then asked more quietly...
Is Taurean Dianis a member of this group?
How should I know? It's not like I asked all their names. I made poison for them. Sterling and Morn always do the talking.
The Rethri sorceress frowned.
Who is Morn?
Oh, shit. I mean, Crimson. No. Stop. Get out of my fucking head, bitch.
Riella smiled.
I thought you wanted to be close to me.
Lieutenant Holder stepped toward the Colonel.
Ma'am... I'm not really comfortable with this kind of...
Your reservations have been noted, Lieutenant.
The Colonel didn't even look at him.
Miss Riella, please continue.
Riella smirked.
I intend to. Okay, Lyris Luria. Did you tell these disciples which poison you used to kill Calcerus Theus?
Oh, that wasn't a traditional poison. I reshaped his water. But yes, I told them the story... The lethality of simple water amuses me.
And the poisons you provided them, were some of them complex, utilizing multiple dominions to make them difficult to treat? She's asking this to try to clear her sister,
Lydia realized.
But it's still useful information, so I'll allow it.
Yes, yes, some of my most devious creations, since none of their agents appear to be quite cunning enough to make use of the more ordinary stuff.
meaning that Liara didn't make the poison, but Tyrion, or Liara, still altered it to deflect any potential blame away from her and toward the original assassin. What was the motive behind killing members of House Theas?
Payment, as far as I'm concerned. Those crazies from the Disciples kept rambling about it being necessary for saving the world. They were willing to pay anything to get it done, and Sterling took the contract.
And you're a member of this Sterling's team?
Right, right.
Do you know what Sterling was paid?
Nope, but whatever it was, it wouldn't be measured in gold. Vakes don't give a shit about that.
He bit his lip, quivering again, and then spoke.
An artifact, probably. And not a worthless one like the sword your baby demigod carries around. Something practical.
Baby demigod? Well, that's no proof, but if that's what Eridus thinks, good. Any idea as to the nature of this artifact?
Sterling didn't give us details. He gave us money. Unlike him, I actually need coin to get by.
Do you believe he already received this artifact?
Eridus struggled again, but he failed to pry his gaze away from Rialla.
Definitely. When you hire a Vakes, you pay in advance, and you let them take care of things.
I suppose someone is going to feel somewhat robbed then, given that Landon is alive.
Rialla kept Eridus pinned in place with her gaze, but she raised her voice.
Paladins, you have any other questions for our friend here?
The colonel stepped forward.
How does he intend to escape? Does he expect Sterling to save him?
Rialla gave a tiny nod.
Answer the colonel's question.
Fuck! No! Sterling's not going to dirty his hands on this! Crimson will come get me, though!
Crimson? Interesting. She's not even supposed to be a sorcerer.
The colonel nodded.
That's all I needed to know for now. Major Hastings?
Lydia limped closer to the barrier.
What does he know about the Shrouded One? Answer her question,
Rialla instructed.
Eridus sighed. That's the leader for that disciple cult, the one that can see the future.
Lydia paused, considering if she wanted to ask her next question.
Better to know, even if it could cause problems.
Is Asphodel the Shrouded One?
Answer Lydia's question.
Eridus gave a thoughtful expression.
Don't know. I can see why you'd ask, though. Hadn't occurred to me, but she does claim to have a similar skill set.
Rash. Guess I gave him some information then, and possibly implicated someone who may or may not be an ally to the other paladins here. Still, I needed to know.
Colonel Wyndham spoke again.
Do you know where Sterling and Crimson are now, or anything about where they would be headed?
Eridus didn't even wait for Rialla to demand an answer.
Not a clue. Sterling doesn't exactly give us a lot of information in advance, just what we need to know. Because, you know, of situations like this one.
He laughed.
I didn't think I'd ever get my mind torn apart like this, but fuck! It sure reinforces the importance of compartmentalizing information.
Rialla whispered one final question.
Do you know if Liara Dianis was involved with the Disciples in any way?
Eridus spoke immediately.
Don't know why you keep asking me about specific names. I don't know any of them, girl, but if... Oh, got it. You're the other Dianis girl. That makes sense. Sad fate, not knowing if you're fighting your family. I hope they slit your throat, bitch.
Rialla stood up, glowering at Eridus, tensing her hands in the air.
If there are no more questions, paladins, I think I'm ready to go.
Lydia parted ways from the other paladins quickly, promising to write up her conclusions in her report. Rialla waited in Lydia's office, and Lydia shut the door when they were alone.
Thank you for helping us. That was very informative.
Rialla ran a hand through her hair.
Yeah, except for the parts that, you know, matter to me. I'm sorry. I wish she had known more. But if we catch Sterling...
The Rethri sorceress laughed, and then shook her head.
Sorry. I mean, that was rude, but... You still want to catch Sterling? I know that's supposed to be the big amazing plan that solves all of our problems, but he's a Vakes, Lydia. You don't catch Vakes. You don't beat Vakes.
Lydia knelt down and tapped on her splinted leg meaningfully.
Believe me, I know what you mean.
Rialla sighed.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to... No, it's fine. You're right. It's a dangerous plan. Probably a stupid plan, really. But it's the only way we're going to learn more about this Shrouded One. and the only way Calcirus and Nadelia Theus are going to be properly avenged.
The Rethri sorceress looked away.
I don't know if I can help you with that. I'm in a delicate position.
Lydia raised an eyebrow.
Because of your family's potential involvement? It's more complicated than that. I can't talk about it.
Lydia nodded.
I know you have no reason to trust me, but if you do decide you want to work with us, the offer remains open. And I'm thankful for your help with this investigation.
Riala looked back at her, giving a half-smile.
Thanks. I'll think about it. In the meantime, though, if you're going after Vakas, you're going to need more than just motivation. You're going to need a lot of help.
Lydia leaned heavily on her staff, smiling.
I know. And I know where to get it.
Later, Lydia saluted the guards at the entrance to the Eternal Vault, a plain-looking building of the same gray stone used in the construction of the prison cells she had just visited. Housing nearly every Dominion-bonded item owned by the Paladins of Taos, the vault was located in a walled complex on the northeastern corner of the Keldrian Crossing Holy Grounds. The vault was named for its formidable defenses, not its age. The previous structure had been destroyed in a Zixian assault 100 years before. Walking was still painful, even with a staff to support her movement, but she refused to be confined to her bed when there was work to be done. She pressed her free hand against one of the sigils on the stone doors, concentrating her thoughts.
Major Lydia Hastings.
The sigil flared gold in response, accepting her authorization, and the door slid open. Golden flames with no apparent source sprang to life in the hallway ahead, illuminating the stone and the shimmering runes lining the walls. Lydia stepped into the hallway, hearing the door slide closed behind her. She was not particularly claustrophobic, but the unyielding stone of the vault elicited a degree of concern somewhere deep in her mind. If the door failed to recognize her on the way out, she knew that no power at her disposal could hope to mar the ritually warded walls. The halls were wide enough for 3 people to walk abreast, but she still felt as if they were pressing in on her as she walked toward her first destination. She passed several additional stone doors, some of which she was authorized to access, some of which she was not. When she reached the first room she was looking for, she pressed her hand to a ward on the door, similar to the one at the entrance.
Major Lydia Hastings.
The door slid open, revealing a laboratory, the walls lined with all manner of shelves containing flasks, vials, and books. 3 massive stone statues, their heads brushing the ceiling 12 feet above, stood inert in corners of the room. The constructs were built to resemble humans on a larger scale, but with vastly thicker arms and legs. Each major component of their bodies was marked with a different rune, indicating dominion bonds used to enhance parts of the bodies of the constructs.
We could make something far more advanced with the knowledge of dominion marks that Adon possessed, but perhaps that would be unwise. These are already formidable enough to stand against a small army. Anything more powerful could be quite dangerous if we lost control of it.
Though they were not currently moving, Lydia knew that they could be animated by sorcerers to serve as one of the most potent defenses of the vault, or another portion of the city if such a thing was deemed necessary. The 4th construct sat at the center of the room, a huge gouge missing from the creature's center. Second Lieutenant Banks was in the process of applying some sort of liquid to the damaged area, and she turned her head as Lydia entered.
Major, thanks for coming. I thought you might want to have a look at this.
Lydia nodded, approaching the construct. It was in a sitting position, but even then, it loomed high above both women.
What's this? I was hoping you could tell me. Trace and I have some ideas, but I think you might have some more insight. Lieutenant Trace is another knowledge sorcerer, so I'm not sure what he would have missed, but I can take a look.
She inspected the gouge manually first. It was a clean cut into the stone, nearly a meter in depth, but less than an inch in width. Something of human size would have simply been bisected by whatever had dealt this damage. The stone was too thick for most attacks to deal it any significant damage, but the body was protected further by the ritual enchantments on the surface. At a glance, the most likely culprit was a stone shaper. A sufficiently powerful sorcerer could overwhelm the protective sorcery and reshape the stone, causing damage.
Dominion of Knowledge, I invoke you.
She pressed her hand against the statue as she spoke, feeling a thrumming pulse in her mind at the effort.
Dominion of Protection, Dominion of Stone, Dominion of Transformation, Dominion of Motion, Unidentified Dominion.
She blinked at the last. She had only seen that last result in one other circumstance.
I probably shouldn't be casting more spells right now, but I need to know what happened here.
Lydia closed her eyes.
Dominion of Knowledge, show me the structure within.
An image of the statue manifested in her mind. Fortunately, the construct had fewer dominions than a human, and in much clearer allocations. Protective sorcery was used to reinforce key areas, and motion and transformation were focused near the joints, presumably to allow it to move when commanded. The transformation sorcery had lines running throughout the body, indicating that it simulated the function of muscles and ligaments. Stone sorcery was present throughout the entire body, indicating that the entire statue had most likely been conjured initially from the Dominion of Stone. The unidentified Dominion was only present along the statue's wound, and the structure of the Dominion itself was exactly what she had seen before. Lydia opened her eyes, turning toward the second lieutenant.
Was this construct damaged with the Sekes?
Banks narrowed her eyes.
No, Major. But you're seeing an indication that it was?
Potentially. I see a Dominion on it that I've only sensed on the Sekes before.
Second Lieutenant Banks nodded.
That's the same conclusion that Trace came to. But it seems impossible.
How was this statue damaged, Lieutenant?
The Lieutenant set the liquid down, patting the statue on a knee.
When Applicant Solaris was taking the trial of command, he demanded personal combat with the leader of the enemy forces.
Lydia chuckled, raising a hand to cover her mouth.
Of course he did. We were ill-prepared to provide a Zixian prince to fight him with, so we moved one of the statues to an adjacent room and concealed it with sight and sound sorcery. Talion was protected with a barrier to prevent him from being pulverized by it, and we laughed a little at the idea of one of the applicants trying to fight one of our sentinel statues. Of course, we didn't want him destroying the room, so we didn't let him use the real Sekes. We gave him a facsimile.
The lieutenant's expression sunk into a frown.
You can imagine how surprised we were when he nearly cut the statue in half.
Lydia frowned.
You're saying someone Dominion-bonded a weapon with the same Dominion as the Sekes?
Banks shook her head.
No. The sword we gave him was just an ordinary weapon with some sight sorcery to make it glow. It had no unusual offensive properties or Dominion bonds. I'm saying Applicant Solaris did this on his own.
Lydia turned her gaze back to the wound, eyes narrowing in thought.
That strange Dominion is in his body now. I saw it in his right hand. Has he been using it somehow, consciously or unconsciously?
Did he appear to be aware of this?
Lieutenant Banks shook her head.
No, Major. He simply played along with the simulation until we withdrew the stone sentry, both because it was damaged and because Applicant Solaris's barrier collapsed, putting him at risk.
His barrier collapsed?
Banks frowned.
I admit that I do not know why, Major, but the barriers we've been putting on him have been failing regularly. I regret to inform you that he was harmed during the trial of imprisonment as a result of this lapse.
Lydia folded her arms.
How many times has this happened, Lieutenant?
The Lieutenant tightened her jaw.
In at least three of the tests, so far as we could determine.
And you've been sending him into more tests? He should have been withdrawn for investigation after the first barrier failed. That kind of lapse can get someone killed.
I apologize, ma'am, but that was not my decision. You will need to take it up with the Colonel.
I intend to do so. Thank you for the insight, Lieutenant. As for what you found here, this does fall within my jurisdiction, as does any investigation related to the Sekes. You are not to divulge this to anyone aside from Colonel Wyndham without seeking my express permission first. Is that clear?
Yes, ma'am.
Good. You may continue your repairs.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, ma'am.
Lydia nodded and left the room, touching the sigil to close the door behind her. She had one more place to visit before she left the vault. She walked down the hall, turning left at an intersection and taking a flight of stairs down two levels. The chamber she was seeking was deep underground, in the most heavily protected area of the vault. She had access to very few of these rooms, but they could not deny her permission to visit an artifact she had retrieved herself. The door had seven seals.
She touched three of them in the correct sequence, pressing her hand against the center seal last.
Major Lydia Hastings.
The door slid open, revealing a room brightly lit by the vast arrays of runes glowing actively on the walls. In the center was a pedestal, and on the center of that pedestal, a glowing